Welcome to the Folk School Radio Hour. That little ditty there was from decorum musician Brennan Henry, who teaches the clawhammer banjo class for us. I'm Julie Tomorrow with the Driftless Folk School, and I am here with Nicholas Wazzy Gale. And you can find out more about us, the Driftless Folk School, on driftlessfolkschool.org, Instagram, Facebook. And hey, Nicholas, how are you doing? Thanks for joining me here in studio.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and it's great to be here.
Yeah, so Nicholas, you are a dedicated naturalist, environmental educator, and you work in wildlife tracking as well. Welcome, and you teach some classes for the Folk School, and we're super happy to have you. And I just would love to sort of chat with you about some of your upcoming classes and some things that you're into in your free time and for your business, Natural Nuances. And first, I just want to kind of get an understanding of, you know, what it's like for you when you are walking out in wild spaces. For me, you know, I recognize some birds. I, you know, see a variety of trees, you know, which kind of face value things that are pretty obvious. What's it like for you when you are out in kind of the wilder places?
Yeah, that's an important part of my world and reality, and somewhere I go to wind down and connect and stay tuned into what's going on out there. And I'm often paying attention to what wildlife are doing. They are our less visible neighbors, but leave us a lot of sign of what they're doing upon the land, both in feeding signs and scraps and tracks and scat. But I'm also just trying to take in the overall ecology and what plants are growing where and why, and what tree communities are, you know, creating the structure of the forest in different places and on what exposures, and just trying to really take in the whole puzzle of how everything's fitting together around me and how different organisms I'm perceiving are interacting.
Yeah, so what would you see if you head out there now? We are recording this in May or April. Here we are.
Yep.
We're recording this in April, and so early in the season, birds are first starting to return from migration.
Yep.
What early signs of spring are we going to be seeing out there?
Well, there's a lot of auditory signs with birds starting to call a lot more and sing and set up their spaces for nesting and breeding. Frogs are waking up, and some turtles are out. So there's, you know, a lot of frog song in the warmer evenings, and a lot of early plants are popping up. You know, if we can recognize the really early forms of different plants that are beginning to show in the forests and fields, some of those are really great edibles, and early stages are tender and delicious. So yeah, there's early nettles are up, and ramps are partly up, and yeah, different things like waterleaf and sochan and all sorts of good edibles are up. And of course, the mud season that everybody around here seems to really have such disdain for is a delightful season for me, because you can often see literal full trails of different wildlife moving through the forest in the super wet, mushy kind of conditions that the mud season and thawing season yields.
Oh, that's a really great point about the kind of the wet ground making clear prints.
Mm-hmm. It's like snow, almost.
Yeah.
Well, not really, but
yeah.
It cues you into how to see what animals are doing in seasons where the ground is more firm and, you know, tracking is more difficult.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you may have piqued the curiosity of some folks, so I really want to start with talking about this May overnight class that you're going to be teaching for the Driftless Folk School, and that's in mid-May, the 17th and the 18th. What is that May overnight? Where are you going to be going, and what is the 2 days of that going to look like?
Yeah, it's made for, you know, a variety of experience levels, but it really is just meant to be a slightly prolonged period of time interacting with the environment, including all sorts of wilderness type skills like foraging and tracking, and hopefully a little fishing with simple equipment. But yeah, that's a really abundant and beautiful time of year, and we're, because of new restrictions in the reserve not allowing camping type behavior out of campgrounds or campsites, we will take a campsite, and so the camping won't be, you know, super hardcore, but our days will be filled with foraging and learning and interacting with the forest, making different things and collecting foods and cooking on the fire, even if we have to do that in the campsite. And it's meant to be fairly straightforward camping with a lot of skills and immersion experience built into it to just give people a good foundation and a good amount of time trying out these different skills and tuning in a little more deeply and hopefully gaining a repertoire of abilities that helps them take their camping to a little bit of a different level, a little different place.
Yeah, that sounds like a great opportunity. And I can imagine that the sort of after-hours fire that folks will be sitting around in the evening will really cultivate some great conversation and connection that you would probably miss out on a one-day class.
Indeed, yeah, we get to be a little bit a part of the night. I mean, even if we are in a campsite, though it'll be a nice one, hopefully away from the road and in a good location, but we'll still be able to hear sounds of the night and enjoy food, including a lot of wild edible content that we've gathered, built into our food, and enjoy the fire. And yeah, I used to think that I had to take people super far and deep into the wilderness to have good connective experience, but it turns out nature's all around us all the time.
All the time. That is true. So are people going to be bringing their own tents? It's that kind of thing? Or are you going to have everyone sleeping under tarps?
People will tent out. Like I said, I'm not looking to make the overnight part super hardcore. Necessarily any of it, but I think we'll still find that we're learning a lot and we're engaging deeply and up early doing things and providing a lot of our own food and really looking to just bridge the gap of people looking to find more interaction and participation with the natural landscape in their outdoor experiences.
Yeah, that sounds really great. Weather, even if it's raining, are you guys out there in the rain?
Yeah, certainly. Mid-May, slightly later May, should be, you know, temperature ranges that aren't highly problematic, even if it is kind of rainy. And rain brings so many gifts, really. It takes some know-how and tolerance to be comfortable and kind of keep up with what you need to keep up with. But if we need to, we'll definitely pitch a fly over the cooking space to help out. You know, heavy rain is definitely problematic in certain ways, but, you know, learning to start fire in rainy conditions is really, you know, a necessary wilderness skill. And not only do colors and plants respond to rain, but seeing tracks becomes very clear as to how fresh things are. There's a real, aging possibility that comes with rain and rain spells that tells us how fresh sign is, and sometimes that gives us a chance to say, oh, this is a very fresh set of, you know, a couple of sets of deer tracks here. Let's quietly follow these and see what these deer are up to and perhaps even see them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, that'll be really interesting. Yeah. So, you know, May flowers, maybe May rain.
Bring May. Yeah.
That'll be great. That'll be a great opportunity for folks. And how many people are going to be in that class? It doesn't...
It only has maybe... four folks so far, but I just talked to people at a class I was at this weekend who seem excited, and I'm hoping to get into the range of seven, eight, nine folks. I don't need a big group, and we can only have 10 at a campsite. So
yeah, well, that's going to be a nice intimate opportunity for mm-hmm. people to really, you know, connect with each other and you know, not get lost in a group, have opportunity for really seeing and being together and yep. you know. Carrying on some good conversations.
Yeah, I hope so. It definitely is enough time to really connect and kind of form a little group a little bit. And, yeah, you know, of course the emphasis in these things is cooperation, not, you know, this man versus nature garbage that is peddled to us in the mainstream media. But, yeah, to really connect with each other and connect with the landscape and cooperate on efficiently achieving general camp tasks that need to get done and collection of firewood, et cetera.
Yeah, well, that makes a good number. I know you have done some other overnight excursions mm-hmm. through the folk school. I know there was a winter one. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that went with people being maybe a little nervous about camping in the winter.
Yeah.
What is winter camping?
I've generally done a larger summer experience and a overnight winter experience. This last winter's winter overnight did not run. I think people were a little less inspired by our snowless winter. But the year before, it filled nicely, and we were deep in the Black River State Forest for that time, and it was excellent. We got to check out sign of all sorts of interesting wildlife that's up there, and forage cranberries even late in the winter from a bog, and set up and had a outdoor, like sleeping under flies or tarps, same difference, around the fire, and some people sleeping in a wall tent, and all sorts of good learning is available in the winter, and I consider it a good time to camp if it's not super, super cold, and if you're well prepared for it. And then last summer, I've started doing a little bit longer experiences on the river, camping out along sandbars and traveling by canoe, which is full of good learning, both in, you know, camping away from connection to, you know, modern life for a little bit more time, and also, you know, canoeing brings its own set of learning, and I'm hoping to do a similar three-day trip on the Wisconsin River in September. But I consider the Wisconsin River a really excellent place for learning wildlife tracking on the immense sandbars and islands there, and also a chance to really view a lot of wildlife and view bird life down there. It's a really rich zone and combines the richness of our hills and forests with a river system that has a lot of the braided channels and islands and floodplain forests that once was what our Mississippi was like, but has, you know, miraculously maintained a pretty wild character down there along the Wisconsin River. So that's looking like that will be in September when the crowds are down, hopefully, and the heat has come off of, you know, it's a little less baking hot out in the open sun there compared to August.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. I've canoed the Wisconsin River a couple times, and it is a beautiful river, and it does feel very remote. Mm-hmm. You're not right along a thoroughfare for traffic or anything, mm-hmm. which probably keeps the wildlife kind of habitat close along the river. And
yeah, there's a couple little towns, and there's houses occasionally, but most of it is, yeah, pretty wild in its character and shorelines. And there's an extensive public land. The whole riverway down there has a protected zone or a protected corridor. I think it's probably our most substantial public land other than the Black River State Forest in the south of the state is the southern Wisconsin riverway. And it's not dammed along its southern stretch, though it is heavily dammed in the northern parts. But yeah, there's a lot of great wildlife down there.
Nice, nice. Well, that's a great opportunity for some folks to get out. And that's a overnight one night, or do you do two nights?
That's yeah, two that's night been overnight? 2 nights and 3 days on the water.
Oh, that's a great amount of time, too, to really, you know, give yourself a full day to let things go and then have a whole day without kind of being back in Babylon or whatever people want to call it.
Yeah, it's a good stretch for sure. It's good preparatory if people are looking to go do wilderness canoe camping elsewhere if they haven't, you know, experienced that world of packing everything they need and being truly engaged for a duration of time without, you know, vehicle access or whatever to commodities as needed.
Yeah, yeah. Where do you put in for that?
Last year we went from Gotham is slightly different. It's a different location.
Maybe even
Gotham. Gotham down to where did we pull out? I think Boscobel is where we ended.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Nice. So right down here in the southwest corner of the state, pretty accessible for much of our listenership here at WDRT in Viroqua.
Mm-hmm.
Getting away from just your overnights and those kind of classes that you offer, you also teach other things through the folk school, some more craft-led things, some foraging classes. I know you've got one coming up on May 3rd, even before your May overnight there, the spring foraging in the Driftless.
Yeah, that's been a long running or a class that I've long had as a standard offering with the folk school and seems to always do well. Definitely a popular subject and one that always holds some allure to people. But yeah, that'll be a full day of learning plants both near to our homes and gardens and also from deeper in the forest and marshes, and then eating a lot of them for lunch. It's a all wild lunch provided as part of that. And I guess I will say that it has a pretty full roster, but I'm interested to see how big the wait list gets because I would offer perhaps a secondary offering of that class. But yeah, it's a really great time of year, and there's so much food in the rich soils of the Driftless here that we can learn to forage from and gather.
Yeah, that sounds like a great class. Yeah, it is such an abundant time of year as things start popping up, and I know, at least for me, this is the time of year where I start craving all those fresh greens when I start seeing them growing from the ground. It's just like,
yeah,
you know, we've survived another winter and we're ready to be nourished again from the soil directly.
Yeah, even those most bitter plants are pretty mild and appealing in their bitters to flush our system and get ready for a new season.
Yeah, very exciting. And then another non-craft class you have coming up is the ecological literacy. And then that is 2 days, but not an overnight.
Right.
At the beginning of June or that second week of June.
What
do you mean by ecological literacy?
So if we think of where our kind comes from and how, you know, traditional cultures relate to the land, they may not follow our system of writing and reading and the language as we know it and as we expect literacy in our culture, but they had a literacy that was just as valid and in many ways so much more comprehensive and deep-rooted in that they could look and walk through the forest and understand what was happening there and then, but also see the signs of what happened at other times of the year and see the signs of what wildlife were using that landscape and what, you know, what food plants were there. This includes even walking through a space in the early winter and seeing stalks of various plants that tell you where roots are under the ground. It's a matter of just really understanding the ecology and all the characters and all of the stories playing out around us in the landscape, and also seeing how we fit into that and how we have both roles to play and gifts to give to that landscape in the form of stewardship and participation, but of course how our needs can be met there, how we can move with grace through the landscape without disturbing it and see more wildlife perhaps, what beings are using that space and how we can, you know, make room for that and ourselves to all fit together out there and really reading the language that surrounds those understandings.
Yeah. Is that a class you offer in other seasons then as well? You mentioned like seeing stalks representing roots.
Yeah.
That would be a different season than spring, though maybe some of that's still visible in the springtime.
Yeah, I consider, so I positioned that class kind of at a really perfect time of year when all of our birds are back. Maybe there's a few stragglers still making their way, but our birds are back, our plants are up, our trees are leafed out. You know, a lot of breeding activity is showing us where our birds are. You know, like our birds are showing themselves, our frogs and other beings are still calling and showing themselves. It's a kind of the time of year when the party's at full tilt in the natural landscape, and it's just a really excellent time to be out there and kind of get to know who all the characters are, what's happening in, you know, low wet places, what's happening on our hillsides and in our meadows and prairie remnants. So it's kind of a survey. Actually, I did it as a 3-day class last year, but I'm trying to tune it down to meet the needs of the busy populace. But it's an opportunity to just kind of get a feel for who are all these characters? What, you know, kind of a good survey of who and what is happening out upon the landscape, and getting to know enough that you can proceed to further that study and further your familiarity, having been well introduced to the cast of characters that is upon the landscape, everything from various birds that are commonly seen to the trees that are predominant tree species, to various, you know, plants, including edibles, but really just looking at the plants that come in so thick during that time of the year, making it into a virtual jungle out there, and also everything from fish and insects to amphibians and reptiles. And if it sounds overwhelming, well, it might be a little bit, but I keep it pretty tuned down to just really like emphasizing getting to know these beings as our fellow neighbor or our neighbors here upon the landscape, and just gaining basic, you know, foundation of relationship and ways we can kind of access that information, places we can go and return to even after the class to kind of like, oh, I remember this plant, but now look, this plant is at this stage here a month later, or hey, this was that frog pond full of frogs, but look, now it's, you know, grown over with different plants, and there's this happening here, and now the heron is out hunting, and the frogs have returned to other places after laying their eggs, and oh, look, there's tadpoles, and just kind of start tuning into, you know, what's really happening around us. A lot of us tend to see our surroundings as wallpaper, you know, and I'm not getting down on people, but we tend to be very busy. We're busy in our lives, and that's demanded of us in modern times, and we kind of take that busyness and that hurried kind of nature to the forest as well, and we want to get in steps and get our heart rate up instead of just like being there and kind of relating to what's around us as a community in another neighborhood that we don't get to often, and just slowing down and tuning into who is up for a visit right now.
Yeah, I like that idea that someone could take this class, get this glimpse into these, you know, even if they can only take a fraction of it with them, but then can return to that location, you know, a few times during the summer, again in the fall, you know, throughout the winter, and see that, even that small space with new kind of like eyes towards those layers. And then maybe they can take the class multiple times. I mean, it seems like a class that the more somebody attended or kind of was open to seeing in that way, the more opportunity they would have to kind of continue to add layers to what they are just seeing on their walk. When they're maybe they are going to get some steps in, but then they pause and really, you know, reflect at that frog pond, or, you know, find that tree or that plant or that little micro ecosystem, give themselves a little moment to really see and to look.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Look a little deeper and connect.
Yeah.
Take some time to connect.
Yeah. Well, I think we are all looking for a little more connection, even if we don't have those words for it, you know, in our busy lives, it's important to connect, and taking a class where you kind of have to, like, that's it. There's nothing else. There's no emails. There's no running around. You're just there to connect and see. And
yeah, it's a huge topic right now, mindfulness and, stabilizing ourselves. And there's a lot of talk of how nature can do that and connecting to nature, which is all, you know, could be a little confusing because, of course, we are all intrinsically connected. Our food comes from the earth. Our air is all the same air that we're breathing along with trees and everyone else. But, yeah, our time in nature can be many different ways, and I think it's important to realize that we can really become more involved in our connectedness. And I try to emphasize in all of my classes how connected we are and how far we can take that. I see myself as a bit of an odd bird who stepped aside from traditional education and just worked to be educated by the land. And that is truly available to everyone. I might, you know, charge for these classes and whatever, but I really put my everything into just really giving people foundations that they can build upon outside of those classes, mm-hmm. or maybe realize how much they really do know, because we all have pieces to the puzzle of understanding our land and fitting into it and playing the roles that we play in our landscape, and we all are participating. You know, like, we've all hit animals with our car. That's a major ecological interaction. You know, like, we're not, none of us can sidestep being, you know, a part of our local ecosystem, but do we work to fully engage and fully participate in a way that we can feel good about, that we can feel proud of, or that we can feel is filling our cup with stability and contentedness and a place of feeling like we not only are part of a human community, but we're also part of a natural community. And I think, you know, especially in times that are challenging or going through phases or situations or stresses in life, like, it's immensely valuable to be grounded in multiple worlds and to be fed and stabilized by multiple worlds. And there's a whole relationship there that I feel greatly enriches my world and reflects all sorts of things that I need to have reflected, both, you know, good and where I can improve in that relationship.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, other cultures, like, people have heard of, like, this forest bathing, mm-hmm. or whatever, you know, like, those, the benefits are well documented.
Mm-hmm.
But prioritizing it, I think, is hard. And
it is. Life is very busy. My life has become very busy, and
I
see the struggle. I understand that fairly well. I'm addicted enough to being out that I make time for it every day, even if it's only 20 minutes or a half an hour, but generally an hour and a half. And it's, I don't quite know how people get by without sufficient time in nature, but I think a lot of us do have practices that get us out there, especially in this area. And
this time of year, too, it starts to get easier.
For sure.
You know, I think we have our own version of hibernation for a lot of folks for winter, but, you know, we're emerging into the sunshine, stretching our limbs and getting eager to dig in the dirt if we're gardeners. And so there's small, close ways to engage in nature. Cause you were saying nature is all around us. It's not, you take a lot of these classes out into the river, out into the reserve, but these relationships exist in people's backyards, in, you know, the small ways, in the verge between the road and the sidewalk.
Yeah, and in my work, it has been a very prevalent theme that to really emphasize that that's often where we can really see how we're interacting and really have actually some really great depth to our interactions, because the nature around us also knows us the best. You know, the birds that might be in our backyard often have ranges that are very, very small. They know our ins and outs. They know our family members. They know our dog. They know our cat. You know, they know our members. They know how to react to each of our family members and everyone who walks by on the sidewalk perhaps every day. And realizing that nature knows us so well is part of really, like, getting involved and really getting excited about that. Like, oh, I have to catch up with this relationship. I'm having this relationship, but am I really, like, honoring this relationship? Like, oh, maybe I should take my tea and sit out on the back step, you know, this morning and not read the news, but instead, you know, see the news off my back porch. That might be a lot more, it might be a little more content or just grounding and stability filled. But there's so much for us, and that's often where we get to see some really neat interactions of wildlife. And, you know, it's about honoring the familiar as much as the exotic in our life.
I think there's a lot of ways to invite those in to our life a little bit more, too. This is probably a whole nother show topic, but, you know, whether it's pollinators, things, or, you know, keeping a brush pile in the back corner for the rabbits or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, there's lots of ways to be intentional about even those small scale relationships.
Yeah.
That.
There's a lot of things, and I try to emphasize those in my classes. One thing in different tracking classes that I promote is if you have a compost pile, build a little sandbox next to that compost pile, and you'll get a nice registry of all your local neighborhood scavengers and herbivores and other animals coming and going from that compost pile. But there's, yeah, there's many, many ways to increase our engagement and just get more out of our days, busy or not.
Yeah, I love that idea of a little bit of sand by mm-hmm. the compost pile. And I think we would probably be surprised by mm-hmm. the nocturnal activity that we really are not a nocturnal species, but that is when so much is going on.
Yeah, it's in response to us. I mean,
yeah.
A lot of species are not strictly nocturnal, but they're very much nocturnal in response to a human-dominated landscape.
Yes, yeah, yep. Yeah. Well, and in an more urban environment, too, like as you were saying that, you know, the birds know you, but I have noticed both in time in town and time in the country, I see a lot more rabbits and squirrels than I do out in rural
oh, yes.
spaces because
yeah.
they don't have to be near me out in the country.
And humans are a big threat in the countryside.
Yes.
I mean, they are in town, but there's more habituation of
yeah.
animals to
yes.
humans
there's
there.
There's a lot more engagement
mm-hmm.
Or opportunity for engagement with, you know, even just, you know, that bunny who is taken off across the yard and then paused and just mm-hmm. like holds still and gives you a good opportunity to just watch them do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is,
yep, you bet. Yeah, the reserve is a funny place in that you can sometimes have to sit a very long time to see wildlife because there's a fair bit of hunting pressure that occurs in the reserve. And the
oh.
wildlife calibrates to that. The squirrels take a long time to come out from their hiding places in the reserve compared to private land even. But, yeah, these are things that start to show up if you take time to pay attention a little longer, a little deeper.
Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah, that they it's a two-way street. They're learning.
Mm-hmm.
They're learning as much about us
mm-hmm.
as we're learning about them, and maybe more and faster because they are more
oh,
motivated.
Yeah. There's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot more at stake for them in most cases. Yeah, that's something I also emphasize in some classes is when we show up at a wild space like that and just getting out of our cars and closing our car doors. I try to encourage groups to try to be mindful right off the bat because think how loud or how far that car door closing carries and what it means to all these different wildlife species around us. Like there's coyotes on distant hills whose heads come up from their resting position and just, you know, gently survey like, oh, what does this mean? How many people? What
right.
are they doing? Like everybody has to pay
right.
attention to what's going on all the time because that's the game. If you don't play the game well, you don't get to play the game anymore.
Your gene pool
you're
didn't
out.
Make it. Yeah.
And you know, we humans we think that we've got it good because we now feel we sit on top fully, but what we've lost is our ability to play the game, to be aware, to be attentive, to hold that attention through a whole hour and a half walk in the woods and just be still, move slowly,
mm-hmm.
trying to really, you know, one concept in awareness and participating and integrating into our local environment or our natural environments is to really be aware of how far out our disturbance bubble is going and see if we can't minimize that enough that our awareness bubble, our ability to be aware beyond that, or how far out our awareness can stretch beyond where our disturbance bubble is. Because if our bubble of disturbance is always beyond our awareness, we're just not going to run into many characters out there.
Oh,
but
right.
if we can go slow enough to really listen out far and watch out far and minimize our disturbance, then we start to become engaged in the way everyone else is playing.
Yeah.
You know, it creates a really calm state. It's a very meditative place, and I get there usually through trailing, like following a set of deer tracks or, you know, engaging in what someone else did, you know, following someone else's lead out there. So I, you know, shut the humanness off as much as possible and just get into a perceptive state, which I think, you know, we're really missing that. Like we all talk about flow states and such, but that was our original state of mind, just like all the other animals. The deer aren't out there like thinking about how nice their coat looks and like, you know, like what they did last night and whether they're going to run into so-and-so or whether they're going to like eat at a nice place tonight. They're
mm-hmm.
just watching around them and really taking time to perceive as far out as they can as they slowly go about their business and feed
right.
or or lay and chew their cud and
spend
time looking over a nice little spot that they can see all around them very well.
Keep their awareness bubble big and their really disturbance bubble small.
Really big and really small.
Yep. Yeah. I love the kind of just the visual image of these two bubbles that are like one is trying to, you know, not overwhelm the other.
Right.
Awareness and disturbance. That's a really great way to. That's next time I take a forest walk. I'm gonna be.
Oh yeah, thinking about that.
Totally thinking about that. I love it.
You know that I work with kids, and it's really sometimes it's slightly appalling how big the disturbance, like shy, like oh man, our bubble just got really big. There goes that thing that I wanted to do down, you know, in another 50 yards or something.
Yeah. Well, in my mind, when I'm taking this awareness bubble walk, it does not have kids in it. It would be a solo experience. Adult only walk because it is a completely different experience, but you know, that's part of their engaging and learning.
Oh yeah. They want to get their hands on everything and really feel it and really experience it and really, participate in it.
Yeah.
Yep.
I would love to transition to just real quick. Two other classes I know you teach through the folk school are crafts, spoon carving.
Yes.
Are you going to be doing that later in the year?
I'm always looking forward to doing more of that, but I did just finish a two-day traditional spoon carving class. I do have a spoon carving class coming up across the state this coming weekend, but it probably will be on into the cold season now before I teach that again. We do have our local carving group hosting a nice spoon carving gathering in early September.
Yes, but we will be. I try to space away from that.
Yes, that'll be coming up soon.
Yeah, that'll be our August talk here at the Folk School Radio Hour.
Yeah, and I teach a little bit of other craft too. With tanning is kind of a craft or a production craft, and that one's usually in the fall. And then also usually birch bark boxes. I have also done. Fire by friction with bow drill sets and such, but that would be craft. You have to be able to craft your set before you can make your fire, ideally.
Oh well, that's so everyone makes a bow drill set mm-hmm. to take home with them. Well, that gets them set up for their own future crafting.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, the humans crafted fire, and then we were able to do a lot more. So.
Yeah, and handcraft is an ecological practice in my perception. You know, we're engaging with local woods and you know, we don't get to carve spoons from green wood if we aren't connected to trees and how they're coming into the human world as they fall or are cut. We have amazing local hardwoods, and birch boxes also are made of various pieces of our landscape and our tree communities, of course, with wooden parts and bark parts. But yeah, you know, it's all the same for me. It's all connected to that space of us as species of this place.
Yeah, and that this place provides our
still
needs.
Still does.
It meets our needs.
Against all odds.
Assuming we don't need all the latest and greatest and fanciest of gadgets. And
oh, but how would this interview get to the people?
Well, we can make an exception for radio. Yeah. I think we can all agree there.
Right. It's a complicated space and scene.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, it is. It is not easy to do all things one way. We gotta live in reality also. As we wrap up here in our next, 15 or so minutes, I would love for you to talk a little bit about your business, Natural Nuances. And also, I know you teach a little bit or do some instructing over there at the Kickapoo Valley Forest School. And I'd love you to talk about kind of bringing these skills to the masses in more ways than just through us at the Driftless Folk School.
Sure. Yeah. Let's see. I do work at the Kickapoo Valley Forest School. I work as their kind of outdoor specialist for their third grade, the kids who have been around the block a little bit, who are ready for some deeper learning, and try to help inform the whole operation there with some write-ups and sharing what I do and what I see and uh, with with them broadly as an organization. But yeah, their emphasis is on how nature can be so educational and grounding, like we've been talking about, for their young people there. And so that's a good part of every week of mine. Weekends are full of classes, often for the Driftless Folk School, but I also run a lot of my tracking classes and events are either just in my own on my own or are with and in coordination with the Southern Wisconsin Tracking Club, which I'd be happy to talk to anyone about who wants to reach out to me. But yeah, tracking and wildlife work, including some work for the DNR this last winter with carnivore surveys, is a big part of where things are growing, or I'm hoping going for me. It's kind of the, as I see it, kind of the fine art of the natural world, something that's not for everyone. But if you are engaged locally and really fascinated by what wildlife are doing, it is the peephole we have into seeing what's really going on out there within our wildlife communities. And it shows up in more places than you would think. This isn't just something for a particular riverbank or whatever. You will see it everywhere you look, if you're looking hard enough. So yeah, and I run tracking programs wherever I get the chance, so I do spread out with that a little bit. And what else did you say? What else do I do?
Julie? I'm not sure. What else do you do, Nicholas? You do a lot of things. You're on Instagram here with your...
Yeah.
Natural Nuances, is that the
that's
Instagram handle?
Natural Nuances is my Instagram handle, and that's where I post a lot of tracking and ecological literacy kind of stuff, naturalist study things. I also have, and my wife and I have, Wild Roots Handcrafts, which shows up with some handcraft stuff. I'm not having a lot of time to make handcrafts right now, but it is still an important part of my life and something that grounds me also. And I do sell some of that. My wife does too. I feel like I'm glossing over something important, but yeah, there are some other things that I involve myself in with private groups and such, just, you know, sharing this and guiding a little bit when people approach me for tracking education or for other specific, like edibles. Sometimes people will take me up on getting them out for a little foraging forays.
I could see some private landowners just inviting you in. So you do assessments. And
I have.
You'll take them around their land and kind of show them what they have.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of potential for growth with that, just for people to understand how wildlife are using their land and how they can do what they do with their land without interfering with what's already happening there. I see a lot of people who have one ecological bent or another and are like, you know, strongly going after this or strongly clearing land for that. And there's good reason to keep land open around here, but I think it's very important to first tune into what's going on there before we put our human agendas upon the land, even if that land was once, you know, a different way. And we understand that well. I'm all for prairies, don't get me wrong. But if there's a whole wildlife community currently happening on your land, like, maybe that should be assessed before we bring in the bulldozer.
Right.
For ecological improvements.
Yes. Yeah, that makes sense.
Call me
that
radical, but...
Yeah, well, just, you know, slowing down, I think very much humans move at one speed, and we don't value other speeds.
Mm-hmm.
And all creatures move at their own speed.
Such a quintessential problem. We, as kind of this modern, civilized you know, kind of colonial type culture, just feel like we always know what's best. We always know what's best for everybody. And we're always ready to jump in there and rearrange things, often with our own motives that may not be, you know, beyond scrutiny, to come in and restructure things yet again for those around us, when really, like, let's minimize our disturbance bubble, let's spread out our awareness. You know, these basic concepts can be applied to modern human life. You know, I think there's a ton of honesty that is, you know, a ton of authenticity, let's say, reflected to us in the way we interact with the landscape. You know, I think we see that in how we interact with animals, how we treat people who are different from us. Like, where are we at with our ability to really empathize with other, you know, otherness, you know, and the landscape or stones or you know, wildlife or trees really show us, like, where is our level of ability to respect and honor others, even if they aren't going to say anything about us taking a whack at them, you know?
Yeah.
It's an interesting world that we step into when we step away from the human world into wild spaces.
Well, there's probably a lot of good lessons for us in there that we could all benefit from.
Yeah.
You know, on many levels.
Yeah, it's quite a mirror.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. That's a good way to think about it. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm really grateful for you coming in today and sitting and talking with me and sharing all of this. I feel like it's given us all a lot to think about and some good takeaways. And I think I will be putting a little sandbox near my compost bin, if nothing else, just to see what's going on in my yard alone, because that just piqued my interest quite a bit.
Your neighborhood cats will really like it.
My neighborhood cats. Oh, goodness. All right. Well, let's see here.
Hey, that's wildlife sign. We have to recognize that it's all around us.
Domestically wildlife. They're maybe a little too wild and not quite domestic enough.
Right.
I know they're out there for sure. You're listening to WDRT Viroqua 91.9. And now joined in studio, I've got Lauren Prophet. Lauren, hi, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm super excited to have you here. Now, Lauren, you are the Driftless Folk School Fellow at Thoreau College. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Yes. So, very briefly, what kind of things do you do for the folk school? And then I want to get into this community hour that you've organized.
Yeah, I'm sort of like an all-purpose assistant is sort of how I would characterize it. So I help out with promotion. I help out with instructors arriving to different spaces that we use, just being around to make lunches and bring lunches to different classes and general support in that sense. And then I also participate in the Thoreau College programming as well.
Nice. Awesome. And one of the things that you have organized in your time here at Thoreau College and the Driftless Folk School is this Driftless Folk School Community Hour. And that is new, and it is today.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
At 6 p.m.
6 p.m. So that is going to be just in a few minutes here when this show wraps up. And tell me about it. What is the Community Hour?
Yeah, the Community Hour is a once-a-month event, so consistent level of programming for the folk school community. It came out of just wanting another space for the folk school community to gather outside of classes. One thing that's really special about the Driftless Folk School is that we're dispersed across the Driftless, which is really beautiful, and a lot of people love that, and I really love that too. But I wanted somewhere for people to show up and meet each other and connect and maybe work on projects that they need input on and ask questions to their own community without having to attend a class. And so now we have this once a month potluck, and people bring projects and books that they're looking at and other things that they've been researching lately and kind of just share the knowledge. So.
Oh, I love that. I love that so much. And that's where both of us will be heading just as this show wraps up here in a couple minutes. And so it's from 6 o'clock until 7 o'clock at
the Commons.
At the Commons over there on Jefferson, right off, a couple blocks off of downtown Viroqua here. And this, I know it's also listed on our website, so if people want to get the dates of future community hour get-togethers, they can check it out there at driftlessfolkschool.org. And it's happened a couple of times now, and how's that? What do people bring for crafts? What does that look like?
Yeah, it's been really lovely to see people come out. I think it's always like an unexpected group of people, just because you never know who's going to show up on a random Wednesday, fourth Wednesdays. So I don't know, we've had like baskets in the works that somebody was kind of stuck on. We've had people bring their spoons to continue carving from the spoon carving circle. Some musicians have brought musical instruments and just done like a quick little jam. We had some people just bring firewood and sit around the fire outside the Commons, and that was really lovely.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's so nice. Yeah, they've got the little outdoor space there. So this isn't necessarily inside. I mean, I guess it would be inside the cafe space, weather dependent,
exactly.
But if the weather is nice, yeah, you've got that little lawn there and the little fire circle. Oh, that sounds like a perfect way to just spend an evening, especially as these evenings are getting later and longer and the weather is kind of nice at that time of day. It's nice to just have an excuse to sit outside and gather with some friends and and just hang out.
Definitely. And since it's a potluck, it's also really nice to see what people are making. I mean, some of it's, you know, chips and salsa or whatever, but some people will bring something that they are trying out very brand new, or something they harvested from the garden recently, and so something they preserve themselves. So all kind of in the theme of the folk school, too.
Yeah. Well, I bet there's going to be some foraged ramps coming up. That's just my guess, that there'll be some ramps and maybe even some morels coming up at one later, maybe in May. Mm-hmm. So I think that guaranteed to be at least a nice variety of food. And but if people don't have to bring food, you know, if they want to just come hang out, eat dinner beforehand, or if they eat late or whatever.
Yeah, just a space to gather and talk about folk school things or anything else, really.
Yeah, I'm sure the conversation can go all over the place. But it's I like the idea of being able to sit together, you know, work on a little craft, see what people are working out. It's just, you know, build community in that soft, welcoming way that doesn't take anything other than just showing up and being yourself and be willing to share with what you're working on. I'm sure there's a lot of show and tell.
Definitely. And it's nice to have, I mean, we have really beautiful community events that are throughout the seasons, like the winter barn dances and the summer community celebration.
Yeah, there's a folk school. Yeah, there's a dance this Saturday on the 26th, actually.
In
Lafarge. Yeah, at the community center there. I'll give a few more details on that coming up here in a minute when I talk about the classes and whatnot we have coming down the line. But anything else you want to share with us before we wrap up and start talking about the classes that are coming up for the rest of the month?
I just want to say thank you for inviting me to share about the community hour. I think it's really exciting for me as the fellow to have an opportunity to meet people outside of the classes, and for those people to connect with each other and to see this community like continuing to solidify itself, you know, as it grows.
Yeah, yeah. The folk school's been around for a long time, but I think we need more of these kind of spaces to just get together, because we're not just the folk school at classes.
Exactly.
We are folksy people. We like sharing and promoting and you know, conversing around these kind of things. So thank you for getting that ball rolling and coming in today to chat with me about it. It's really nice to have you explain it and talk about it. And I guess I'll see you over there in just a little bit.
Sounds good.
And before we end the show today, I just want to talk about some of the things that are coming up at the Driftless Folk School here at the end of the month. Just this coming Saturday, we have Chainsaw Safety with Luke Saunders, and that's a level 2 class. There is a level 1 class later in the summer, so they're constantly leapfrogging each other. Really good to get your chainsaw skills. There's also DIY photovoltaics with John Passy. And then, like I said, that spring barn dance, that's at the community center over in Lafarge. Potluck starts at 5:30, and then the actual dance goes from 6:30 until 9 o'clock. And that's all this Saturday. And then the next Saturday, which is May 3rd, there are windmills for water pumping with John Passy, our off-grid guru over there. Spring foraging in the Driftless with Nicholas, who we just heard from, and so much amazing information and great perspective there. May 10th, there's Farm to Yarn with Ellie Barbo and Sarah Friedman, and there will be baby lambs, folks. So get yourself signed up for that class if you are into lambs. That's May 10th. And then we've got a Thursday or a Friday class, which is kind of cool, and that is Intro to Oxen. So you are going to be seeing a team of yoked oxen pulling implements and working the land, which is just so amazing to see. Oxen are massive and beautiful, and it's powerful to watch Annika work with them. So that is May 15th or 16th, a Thursday and a Friday. And then May 17th on the Saturday, there's the Hammered Copper Bowls with Martha Bush. There's Spring Outdoor Wilderness Skills, that camp out we just talked with Nicholas about. May 24th, there's a traditional tool sharpening with John Anderson of Star Hill Timberworks. And so that's really awesome to get those kind of skills built. Just because if you're using your tools, you need to keep them sharpened. May 25th, there's Beekeeping for Beginners with Jordan Bendel. And then June 4th through 8th, there's a 5-day timber framing class, again with John Anderson of Star Hill Timberworks. I believe they will be building the frame of a sauna. At least that's what they were doing last time. And then going on into June and then into July, there is Mushrooms for Food and Medicine with Linda Conroy. There's a chainsaw safety course level one, Farm to Yarn, which is going to be more focused on spinning your yarn. There's a scything class. There's sharpening a scythe class. There's dairy ferments, plant wisdom, so many more things. Check out the website. We've got a lot happening at thedriftlessfolkschool.org. You can always go on our website and sign up for our newsletter. You get a nice, simple once-a-month newsletter. Keep you up to date on all the fun happenings. And we're going out right now with a new tune from Brennan Henry, and it is called Truly. Thanks so much. Thank you.